Hello, I'm Julian Rubinstein, and welcome to The New Conspiracist, the show that delves deeply into conspiracies and pulls them out of the annals of the internet and out into the broad, wide world of your eardrums, dear listener. And this week, I am joined, as always, by my sidekick in residence, James Ball. How are we, Jamesy?
Actually quite recovered from a recent music festival.
Indeed. Well, I mean, we thank you to everyone who came to see us perform at Wilderness. It was pretty, pretty fun, wasn't it?
It was. If Wilderness wants to sponsor us next year, they're very welcome and they can have a bigger plug. But, you know, until then, other music festivals are available. But Joel, who's our guest this week?
Well, look, this week we're joined by a multi-award-winning stand-up comedian, actor and writer. He did a record-breaking show, actually, Live In It, which was released on Amazon Prime as a special in over 200 countries worldwide. He was the first British Asian stand-up to sell out a 10,000-seater venue, Wembley Arena, no big deal. And you may have seen him in a leading role alongside Patrick Dempsey in the 10-part international TV series Devils. He's also hosted things like Stand Up for the Week for Channel 4, twice headlined live at the Apollo, and was contestant on the third series of Taskmaster. And his videos, you know, have racked up millions and millions. In fact, you know, over 35 million views on Facebook online. I talk, of course, of Paul Chowdhury.
I got quite scared during that intro for a while there. I was like, you know, was thinking he was the first British Asian comedian to sell out. I thought we were going in like a slamming critique.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Wembley Arena really helps that sentence.
He's the first British Asian to ever sell out. Got there before Rishi. It was strong. He did well.
So what are we discussing with Paul then?
Well, look, rather than one idea, this week we're kind of talking about a plethora of conspiracy theories and a kind of cluster theory that is really, in, you know, absolutely connected to its creator and to the platforms. Also hundreds of millions of dollars, but I think is no doubt it has caused a whole heap of damage and lawsuits, because this week we're talking about Alex Jones, InfoWars, and the Sandy Hook mass shootings. Paul, welcome to The New Conspiracist.
What an honour it is to be here.
Come on, man.
Already blushing.
What's it like being on Taskmaster then? Do you actually get really competitive with the other comedians?
Well, I did season 3, and the only season that had been aired to that point was season 1, because they shot season 2 and 3 together. So there'd only ever been one season out of Taskmaster, so nobody quite knew how it worked and how to play the show. So do you go up there with your material? Do you improvise? So no one quite got it, because it takes a few seasons for a series to embed. I think I was part of that process.
What was the weirdest task that you had to do in the show?
It's weird because that season was aired in 2016.
Are you telling me you were responsible for Brexit? Is that what you're saying?
Partly.
That you actually, it was your fault.
Yeah, actually, Alex Horn just tasked you to, hack the 2016 referendum.
Was the fucking referendum just a challenge on Taskmaster?
It was a Taskmaster challenge, the referendum with Nigel Farage was involved.
You know, when you were sort of growing up, like, what were the kind of first sort of conspiracy theories you heard? You know, we're talking like Fisher-Price, my first conspiracy here.
There was a documentary on Netflix, which was about the 9/11 Twin Towers incident.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole thing about how they were brought down, how bin Laden was involved. And when you're younger, see, I think conspiracy theories and even, it's kind of a form of radicalization to a certain degree. If you can get people on board at a young age and convince them that what your conspiracy, and they don't like to use the term conspiracy theory. That's the one thing conspiracy theorists don't like, is the term conspiracy theory. Because actually what we're doing is a conspiracy theory. So if you tell the truth, it's actually a conspiracy theory. So theirs is the truth.
But I totally know what you mean about the 9/11 conspiracies, because I was banging to that shit at uni. Mm.
Which
Jesus Christ.
This is almost always its loose change.
Which fuel.
Lived on YouTube for years and was jet fuel can't melt steel beams.
It was loose change, and it was also in plain sight. There was that one. That was just, you had to just order that on DVD. So I remember because my flatmate ordered it, we were really excited, got blazed up, had a good watch of that, fucking loved it. It was great. I mean, learnt nothing apart from some really interesting maths about jet fuel that then got totally just annihilated by another mate of mine who was like, steel doesn't burn that fucking temperature, you dickhead.
I love that, like, dismissed as if everyone should know that.
I don't know. I mean you were you brought in by the jet fuel? How did you get in?
Well, the planes were full of petrol at the time, weren't they? So when a plane that big hits a building that of that nature and it burns through it, it just taken off. So it was, you know, it was full of petrol. And I don't think there was a button being pushed. But then the conspiracy theory there was Bush was informed of the Twin Towers when he was at a nursery kind of speech he was doing. Yeah. Do you remember that?
It was a really weird scene because he, like, didn't want to scare the kids.
And yeah, so exactly.
He, like, finished the storybook and then went to deal with, like, the biggest domestic terror attack ever. It's such a weird bit of footage.
And then there was all that shit about Building 7. Like, do you remember that shit?
Yeah.
And it was like, all the NSA files are in there. And that's where all the Jews keep all the gold.
There's some mental ones about that. There's one where the Twin Towers had all the records. They were going to cancel all world debt.
Yeah, that exactly was it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nazara, and because the papers were in there, that was why they were destroyed. And, you know, that's how things work.
Do you remember as well at the time those chain emails? It was still relatively early days of Gmail then and stuff like that. And I remember getting one that had been forwarded like at least 1,000 times, purporting to be from some sort of military intelligence guy talking about the corkscrew sort of spiral of the plane and how it couldn't possibly have been done by someone without military training. Do you remember all that?
Oh, yes.
Those are the days.
These ended up
you can sit around all morning discussing it.
And if you don't pass this on, you could die.
I mean, it's coming to something when, like, the deep state can't deal with email and YouTube, though, isn't it?
It's
true. Come on. Anyway, this is sort of tangentially connected to today's topic, which is InfoWars and the Sandy Hook mass shootings. And kind of just to introduce the topic, at the centre of this week is this 48-year-old guy who's, like, the Beelzebub of conspiracy theories. He's called Alex Jones. His website, which kind of started out of local American shouty talk radio, is InfoWars, and just pushes every conspiracy theory really you could possibly imagine. InfoWars is bigger than The Economist. It gets about 10 million monthly visits.
That's mad, isn't
it? He's got a syndicated show across the US. And you name it, he's said it's fake. He's said the 1995 Oklahoma City bombings was faked, that September 11th, as we've talked about, was faked, the moon landing was faked. But sort of over the last decade, with a couple of little, you know, walkbacks that we can talk about later, he's been claiming that the Sandy Hook massacre was fake. And we should just sort of go, the Sandy Hook massacre was an absolutely horrendous, unimaginably awful thing. 26 people dead, 20 children, ages 6 and 7, and 6 adults trying to protect them. One of the most horrifying school shootings in American history, and that's a dark history.
Well, it's kind of nuts, isn't it? Because, I mean, when we were doing the show on Saturday, you know, you were talking about how these families who had just lost their children, when they moved from house to house, being hounded, being doxxed.
Yeah, they had excrement sent to them. They had
death threats. Of all the conspiracy theories we've covered, or conspiracies we've covered on the show, this is really up there with the fucking darkest ones, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And, like, it's never very clear with Alex Jones what he believes or not. His claim was no one was actually killed. It was all what he calls crisis actors. And it was this idea that it was there to sort of bring in gun control and sort of start a civil war. What made you pick Alex Jones, Paul?
So he started off as a gun lobbyist in the early InfoWars days. So he wanted people to rise up against the government because at that time there was lobbyists of gun control for obvious reasons. You know, they want to be prepared for this inevitable war that they think is going to take place in the future. So why are they not armed? Because everything is the mainstream, and the mainstream are against the truth, as far as Alex Jones is concerned.
When did you first come across him, Paul? Like, well, I think I didn't realise that he was actually a gun control lobbyist at the time.
Well, advocate.
Sorry,
he's been a sort of shock jock radio host his whole career.
Well, that's what I remember. But at the time, I remember sort of when the first incantation of Alex Jones, you never would have called him a mad right winger then. Because what he did quite cleverly, I think, at the beginning, was he used a lot of the kind of realities of CIA interventions and military interventions in South America and places like that to say, look, man, don't be so naive. It's happening here, man. You know, and, you know, empirically, you can prove that stuff happened. And at uni, Cheney, he was seen as someone, you know, I mean, this is way back in, you know, 1876 when I was at university. But like, you know, it was seen as a sort of a left-wing guy. I mean, what was the first time you came across him, Paul? Were you just like in a uni dorm, smoking a joint, watching fucking YouTube? Or how did you come across him?
Well, I wish I was as young as you, mate, when I was at uni and podcasts were around. YouTube wasn't even around when I was at uni. We were still using videotape, mate.
Yeah.
Can I ask, what's videotape?
Yeah, what's videotape? Well, videotape, James, let me tell you, is an incredible medium. Anyway, Paul, go on. Tell us, how did you come across him in the first place?
The early days of podcasting, I subscribed to the Alex Jones InfoWars podcast because when you listen to this podcast, it's almost like an evangelical Christian speaker who's passionate, he projects, he shouts. You really get taken in, and the dramatic music, you feel as if you're part of this movie. What we know to be the truth is an absolute lie. And the problem is, he's actually got some things right. When a stop clock is right twice a day, people tend to believe that stop clock. And he's probably one of the most famous stop clocks in the world.
I mean, he does have this amazing delivery style where he will sort of... It's the classic throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. So he can launch about 50 different theories in one episode.
Yeah.
And then obviously, if one of those proves even tangentially right, he shows you that clip forever.
Yeah.
But I find it really stressful to like listen to or what, because obviously he live streams everything on video as well now. I've just never seen someone look more perpetually on the edge of a heart attack. Every time I watch him, I feel like this is going to be the episode where he just, in midstream, just suddenly dies straight onto the desk. And, you know, that you know, it's quite a high-stress watch.
Very much so. Where he's screaming, he's shouting, you can see his veins popping in his head. He's a big, you know, a normal American medium, I'd say, but extra large in the UK. So you watch him.
No, I mean, he's fucking manic. He's one of the most manic people that there's ever been put in front of a camera. Name one person in history who's been more manic than him. I don't think they exist.
Jerry Sadowitz.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
No, I mean, he does make evangelical preachers look low energy.
Yeah. Well, he's a white guy. Whereas you see the black evangelical Christian speakers and they preach and they project and you get into it. It's almost like being at a music concert. It's incredible. But with him, it's more, it's hate speech, really, isn't it, a lot of the time. But he has got a few things right. That's the thing.
So what's the ones he got right in your memory?
He said the water in America was changing the sex of frogs. Turns out they were becoming hermaphrodites, and he got that one right.
Hermaphrodite frogs.
Yeah. To be fair, he did get that from the biased mainstream media, but yeah, he did.
Well, that was one of your weird biased mainstream media stories, wasn't it, that he's picked up?
I mean, I didn't write that one, but yeah.
Weird, man, because I thought you were bang into that hermaphrodite frog face. I thought that was like what you're all about now.
But only, you know, recreationally.
What I found so mad about it was when I guess it was about 5-6 years ago, wasn't it, when it really started to become clear that he was just making an absolute packet of selling any sort of vitamin supplement that had never been really FDA approved, that was suddenly like being thrown out. And I remember, I think Vice or someone made a documentary where they literally watched him like in live action do his kind of like hate speech evangelical madness, and they're like, shout cut. He just went, phew. And he was like, right, are we doing the pills now? Are we doing the pills? Are we doing, what, are we doing the lawnmowers? Or is it the guns, the pills? And he would literally, I mean, he would sell anything, wouldn't he?
It's sort of a really weird business model, but it's a clever one, because Fox hosts and people like that end up getting a little bit reined in if advertisers pull their subs. I mean, Fox News makes a ton of money off what's called carriage fees. If you've got cable there, whether you watch Fox News or not, they get about $2 a month of your money. And so it's a bit sort of resistant to criticism, but not totally. InfoWars, no sane company would ever advertise a million miles near it. But he sort of takes like usual wellness supplements, super masculine name, you know, virile juice or this sort of stuff.
Penis extender.
Yeah, but also will sort of sell stuff because he keeps going, society's going to collapse, the government's going to come for you, you should be a prepper. So he sells like really pricey food packs, bulletproof vests.
Yeah.
He doesn't like sell guns, but he sells everything else. He sells iodine.
Yeah.
Which helps you with radiation, only to an extent. It really only helps your thyroid. But they sort of push things like colloidal silver, which if you have too much of, Google having too much colloidal silver, because I kid you not, it makes someone look fully like a Smurf.
Oh, what?
Fully, fully blue skin.
Fuck.
I'm not even joking.
I mean, you say that, yeah, but that's never been tested. All right, you don't know. I mean, the Blue Man Group do all right, don't they?
So
they go around
they could
fucking
save
bluing
a fortune
it off, don't
of
they?
Pain, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
On, like, a good day, he would be making $800,000 a day.
Fuck
and
off.
And it looks like
that
he made
much?
About $165 million.
What?
Just from 2015 to 2018. They absolutely rake it in. Huge audience, huge profits. It's really funny if you watch it. You know, if you see sort of Farage guest on it on Milo Yiannopoulos or Paul Joseph Watson or Jones himself, they'll sort of go from shouty, 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 shout. And then about a 5-minute segment on why you should have, you know, this wonderful supplement, where they'll sometimes get just as shouty. It's a really weird mix.
It's really strange though, isn't it, Paul? Because there was something about Alex Jones, or certainly the way I perceive it anyway, that sort of opened the floodgates to that sort of normalization of this sort of totally bananas analysis becoming sort of much more sort of on deck. Like it wasn't like something that just sort of this weirdo was talking about. Suddenly everyone was chatting about it. And I sort of wonder, even if, you know, I'm not necessarily putting him in the same bracket as Jones, but Joe Rogan's got some pretty mad ideas. Mm. And it's sort of, I wonder without Alex Jones, you know, was that sort of almost like the first step of building up to what eventually became, you know, Donald Trump spouting absolute fucking bollocks on a constant and sort of biblical scale. Mm,
exactly. Alex Jones also got the other one correct, where he said the old elite are drinking the blood of children to prolong their lives. And it turned out that some of those reports were correct. As we know now, with the internet, some of these things with child abuse were correct. But I don't think that's as far-fetched as some of the other ones.
No, it's weird, but it's similar to, you know, a bit like the whole QAnon satanic paedophile stuff being like, well, how many steps away from that is Jeffrey Epstein? Mm. You know what I mean? And this is the power of conspiracy theory.
Someone like Joe Rogan's conspiracy theory that Michael Jackson was chemically castrated is a big one that he speaks a lot about in his podcast.
Yeah. But this is part of the problem, isn't it? Because in the middle of the pandemic, when Spotify had paid millions of pounds for Joe Rogan's podcast to be an exclusive on their platform, he suddenly started pushing out the biggest load of bollocks about how to treat COVID completely without any scientific basis. And it was very difficult to shut it down because, as Paul's been saying, and as you've been saying, James, the commercial like viability of this sort of absolutely heretical, you know, conspiratorial nonsense has, like, that's what people want to hear.
Joe Rogan plays quite a clever game where essentially by his choice of guest and by what he challenges them on or doesn't challenge them on, he manages to dance around. And what he would be saying was that he wants to reflect the whole range of arguments and not just sort of self-select like a lot of media do, which is a much cleverer game in some ways than someone like Alex Jones.
The thing is, with Alex Jones, I've followed him pretty closely for many years, and I think he's more of a contrarian than a real-life convert. Like, I think he understands the fiscal gains to be made by basically feeding red meat to the nutters and to sort of just keep it going, to keep it building. Like, I think it's something that he understood sort of pre-Trump. And I also wonder, you know, in a lot of ways, whether, you know, that was kind of what really laid a lot of the groundwork, you know, for these theories to sort of mainstream with a candidate like Trump. I don't know, Paul. I mean, what's your take on all of this?
In terms of Alex Jones, he wasn't the original conspiracy theorist, if we're going to use that term. He was the one that became the biggest on on the podcast platforms.
I can.
And he claims now to have no money because he's now liable for $49 million of punitive damages. I was watching the case on YouTube, just like the case with Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. It's a fascinating insight into a human being's public persona. And he goes, well, you're going to give him some free tape? You're going to show him some more fake tapes? Shut up. Yeah, you know, you're going to show him. It's almost, I'm really sorry. And what are you going to do? You're going to show him more? Just that voice he put.
Let's jump quickly into the sort of court case, because that's quite recent for us as we record this. It was, you know, as Paul was saying, this extraordinary kind of moment, because one of the key things with this was he got $4.1 million in compensatory damages against him and then 45 in punitive for a total of $49 million. But that's not to all the families. That's to one family.
Wow.
And there are 10 families that he has been found to have libeled because he didn't cooperate with the trial early on. He basically didn't file a defence. So he was found pretty much like liable for it in absentia. So this is $49 million for one family. But because of this sort of absolutely amazing moment in court where it was revealed his own lawyer had accidentally sent his phone that had all his financials, all the information about, as you said, him trying to take money into offshore accounts, trying to do this sort of stuff, it's going to be a lot harder for him to claim bankruptcy without actually handing over all the money he has. But also, he has almost certainly perjured himself by lying under oath that he didn't use email and he didn't have any text messages.
I mean, it's an extraordinary
part,
isn't
it? That's a criminal offence.
Yeah, I mean, that female judge, when she actually took him to pieces, it was like one of the first times, literally since almost the referendum, I feel like, where someone just was like, hello, sanity.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of sanity here. Just because you believe something doesn't make it true.
And this judge said to Alex, you're not telling the truth under oath. She said to him many times, I don't care what you think, it's what's the truth. She's quite brave.
It was quite a nice line to hear, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a great line.
As well, and like, Paul, I'm interested what you kind of think of this, because like, one of the things with Alex Jones is he's always sort of pushed this hyper-masculine, hyper-macho sort of image, and he got his ass handed to him by, you know, a female Latina judge. And, you know, she wasn't, like, getting angry or anything. She just had no patience for his shit. Do you think, given his weird fan base, that's got to give him some, like, issues with how he looks with them?
Well, yeah. At points, he looked quite small and almost was under his breath saying, well, I didn't know this. I was given this information. So he's got a team of researchers. It's kind of like writers on Mock the Week, for instance, you know, they'll give you a bunch of stuff, give you a pack and say, here you go, let's just throw these about and see which one sticks, as you were saying earlier. See, the thing is, lots of families or lots of people have been involved in, say, the Boston bombings, and they don't want to go up against this audience. This audience that listen to Alex Jones are like, you attract the people that are kind of similar to you in terms of a crowd. People didn't want to go up against Alex Jones because of the fan base who as you say, the families of the Sandy Hook massacre were targeted. But once they've lost a child, what more? They were like, what can you take away from us that we haven't already lost? So why not just take this fight on? So they were stronger than any other people that would have taken this group on.
Yeah, I mean, it's unimaginable as well what they've had to do to get to this point. You know, this is 10 years on from that. And they've had 10 years of being told, you know, the worst thing that could happen to you has happened. And you've had people saying it didn't. And then Jones, I think, kind of believed his own crap as well, to an extent of, he kept talking about the First Amendment and saying that, you know, the Sandy Hook parents suing him and going for him was like an attempt to diminish the First Amendment. And like I'm quoting him here, you know, if questioning public events and free speech is banned because it might hurt someone's feelings, we are not in America anymore. They can change the channel. They can come out and say I'm wrong. They have free speech. As if he's sort of doing some sniffy journalistic defense against like a government raid. Mm. But like, this isn't First Amendment. It's not the government that got him. It's defamation law. And like, he was free to go out and say the crap that he said, and they were free to sue his ass for it.
Mm.
And like, the First Amendment had nothing to do with it. And so I think sometimes people like that say stuff for so long and get away with consequences for so long that they start to think it's true.
Yeah, it's like that South Park episode when he stole material. It was a stand-up. Remember that stand-up episode where he stole material and he passed it off as his own?
Totally.
And then he afterwards he believed his own lie.
It literally is.
That character is exactly like exactly like Alex Jones. Do you remember that? That was a classic episode.
Do you know what? Mate, it's such a good episode. But something you just said before, I just want to pick back up on, which is like the idea of not wanting to go up against, you know, in that case, Alex Jones's audience. But I think you could just as easily say, you know, just as much against, you know, Donald Trump's quote unquote undesirables. One of the biggest problems with someone like Donald Trump is that he knows, just like Hitler knew with the Hitler Youth and with the SS, that the most powerful thing as a tool politically and culturally is fear of the mob, and that you can utilize a mob to galvanize against whoever you want. And the thing about Jones was, even though he claimed to be this sort of like free speech advocate, the examples of just what these parents went through, you know, being doxxed when they moved house, having excrement put through their door, you know, it's all literally total mob harassment, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I'm not comparing Alex Jones to Hitler here, but the similarities there was when Hitler, his fame was at its height, was the invention of radio, and he was the first to go viral on radio. So when radio was invented, his speeches were put out on radio, and that's what made him so big. And in a certain aspect, I'd say Alex Jones in the birth of podcasting brought him to this point in history.
Totally. I hadn't really thought about it like that before.
But it's also how Donald Trump and Twitter and how he used that account over, you know, the course of a decade until he was finally banned after losing the sort of presidency. Trump knew that if he tweeted, it wouldn't just mean sort of millions of Twitter users piling on someone, but Fox News would follow suit, everyone else would follow suit. The bully pulpit of the presidency was almost less powerful than his sort of Twitter account with loads of followers. I will also just add, while we are on Donald Trump, he may or may not be appearing in our Tier 4 Platinum Circle bonus episode this week. Subscribers get ad-free episodes and a bonus episode and a chance to influence what we discuss by emailing hello@newconspiracist.com. If you want more on Trump, please do stay on for that one. But this sort of weird thing with Jones, though, and how he sort of tried to cope with this over the year is, he, like, more than once retracted the Sandy Hook claims, like, to try and get out of trouble. And, like, the interesting one was kind of, in 2019, in a sworn deposition, so under oath, he claimed that Sandy Hook definitely really happened and he'd been suffering from a, quote, form of psychosis when he questioned it. But then back in court, he was sort of saying it's all fake, you're actors, this is a stitch-up. It's sort of really erratic. He doesn't try and stick to a story, which I guess is often the case with these guys, isn't it, Paul? They just sort of, it's like punching fog.
Yeah.
You could tell as well that he really, really missed being able to rant on what he wanted. Like, he hated having to just answer the question.
Yeah, he just couldn't do it. I mean, he literally could not do it. He just looked like a small child who didn't understand any form of discipline whatsoever. But Paul, for you, when you started seeing, you know, the case online and, you know, actually now that we have the verdict, do you think that we're sort of entering a sort of more sort of post-truth age? Do you think people will have, you know, more concern about just saying whatever the fuck they want online and thinking they can get away with it for the clicks?
The internet is rife with conspiracy theories. And if you want to see real conspiracy theories and the ones you thought people had forgotten about, just go onto TikTok. It's full of conspiracy theories.
I mean, 100%.
And people say that, I think even this may be a conspiracy theory, and I'm going to spout one out there, is when you go on to TikTok, which is controlled by a Chinese organization, and they say to a certain degree, the Chinese government, the West get a more dumbed down version of TikTok. Whereas if you watch it in the East, you're getting a much more cultured and intellectual approach to your feed, rather than what we see over here with people asking a woman if she's touched his wood or if he wants to see her wood or something like that.
I've heard that one. The jury is actually out, and I don't think they would be quite that crude. But the interesting thing is, TikTok is an absolute black box algorithm. We know little bits about how Twitter sorts a feed. We know how Facebook does. We know TikTok is really aggressive on how it will mute things down. People like to talk about sort of, you know, soft blocking and soft, like, muting that limits audiences. Lots of right-wingers in America think Twitter does this to them. TikTok really does. And, like, one of the ways you can guarantee a TikTok will get no views is to mention one of its commercial rivals.
No way.
Because, you know, it had Tiller that got a lot of particularly black creators onto it early on. If you mention Tiller in a caption or in a video, it
that was it
way
for you.
Down. Like, you know, you'll get less than a tenth of your normal views, if that. And so, you know, we don't... There's lots of accusations around TikTok and taking data, etc., which some of which will be overblown, some of which will be true. You don't operate as a Chinese company without operating there. But they have the most control over our eyes at the moment, you know, even more than the old YouTube recommendations algorithm. And we know that, like, these algorithms tend to radicalize you. You can go really quickly from just sort of watching a bit of a skeptical thing about the news on YouTube, and just after about five autoplays, you're watching something about why lizards run the world.
And then suddenly you call up your neighbors and all start trying to do some fucking, you know, sort of like coordinated strange dance routine to Toxic by Britney Spears. Is it true, though? Do they actually seem to serve up more of that crap in the West than they do in the East? Is that like legit?
We just don't particularly know. It's different country to country because tastes are different country to country. So part of it is, you know, if it keeps giving people what they want, some countries are going to have a classier feed than others.
God, that is so fucked up, isn't it? Well, Paul, listen, we've sort of get to that part of the episode where we need to start asking you whether you think that this conspiracy theory is legit or a fugazi. Is it a fake? So when it comes to Alex Jones, InfoWars and the Sandy Hook conspiracy, is this a real conspiracy or is this a conspiracy theory?
Are you talking about, is the Sandy Hook incident a conspiracy theory or is Alex Jones a conspiracy theory?
Both, either?
Hang on, Alex Jones doesn't even exist?
Alex Jones is actually a character created by Donald Trump. He doesn't exist. He's an actor. He's been put out there. In fact, the court case taking place in America over the Sandy Hook, it was actually orchestrated by Trump to control us. And now we're going to think... Now, this way, we actually think the Sandy Hook incident was real. But it's actually Alex Jones is one of the actors.
The real crisis actor is Alex Jones.
Yeah, he's the crisis.
I mean, he has quite...
He's definitely the fucking crisis.
He has quite helpfully kind of debunked his own conspiracy theory by doing affidavits and losing lawsuits. But I do like the wheels within wheels theory.
What is the future, though, for sort of platforms like InfoWars and stuff now, I wonder? You know?
Well,
I
mean, it's funny you say that earlier on, James. You were talking about the TikTok, and it made me think. I've been slightly more active on TikTok over recent weeks, and yesterday I put a video up about the rise in electricity prices, and it barely got any views. And I was thinking, that's very strange, that one video about the electricity companies, which, as we know in this country, has gone up 500% and is set to rise in October. Why has that been almost because of, and they say it's because of Russia, why has that now been muted? And it's one of my least contentious videos, if we're looking at that one.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen Paul's stand-up, you will know he doesn't often hold back. He's certainly not one who's afraid to put it out there. So I do find that quite bizarre. I mean, it is interesting, though, isn't it? I've seen loads of TikTokers who are starting to put out stuff that... It's not like there's much fact-checking going on, is there?
So we might have to do TikTok in a future app, might
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we might have to just deal with that.
But like the thing is, like, InfoWars will probably not survive this. Alex Jones may well be a diminished thing after it. His supporters, that army that he's built, are going to go somewhere. Like, if you're in this space now, like, there is going to be a land grab because they're not going to suddenly go... Oh, actually, maybe the government aren't taking our, you know, guns and aren't engaging in all this deep state shit and aren't going to start a secret war and wipe out white people and all of the shit they believe they will take somewhere else. So, like, you know, on one level, yes, it's lost a leader. On another, that's a chance for a new one to emerge, isn't it?
It's weird because he is literally like the embodiment in many ways of why this show was created in the first place. You know, we wanted to create a show that debunked conspiracy theories and talked about them. And he is, in many ways, the, you know, absolute modern personification of, you know, that entity who, as James was saying earlier, will within a 5-minute rant, you know, shoot off so many different sort of arrows of conspiracy into different areas, often completely unrelated, that it's almost impossible to debunk them. But yes, for me anyway, on this, you know, Alex Jones is a walking, breathing conspiracy theory machine.
Well, what is Alex Jones going to do now? Probably have to go back to presenting the One Show.
Strange double life for Alex there.
Paul, now I understand that you've got some rescheduled tour dates in October coming up.
Yeah. I'm going back on the road in October around the country. I'm back out there.
You excited to get back out on the road?
You know, I never like leaving the house because I've become almost acclimatized to this, this conspiracy theory about how they want to keep us locked up. It worked.
just like being locked up.
I've become the modern day Howard Hughes, who just stays in one room with a bucket in the corner. This is another conspiracy theory. With the ABBA concert going around the world, which cost millions to make, and they never have to leave their homes. They're just holograms going from country
it's
to country.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Will that happen to us?
Are you going to do the hologram approach for a future tour? Is that the plan now?
We don't have to even suffer. But how will banter work as a stand-up? How would you talk to the front row?
AI banter?
Just going strong on that front row early. Just going strong in the front row early. They won't know what the fuck's happening. They'll just take it. Because then, you know, you won't know what to do.
Break their spirits.
So Paul's tour, Family Friendly Comedian, starting on the 19th of October in Hackney. And you can get tickets at paulchowdhury.com. That's Paul, CHOWDHRY.com. Have you got anything else coming up that you want to tell our listeners about, Paul?
I'm thinking about doing the moon landings again, because we haven't done that for a while.
Long
just
overdue.
Just launch yourself up there.
Also, I'd love to get you two on my podcast. I've got a podcast out there.
Love that. Love your podcast, mate.
I'd love to get you.
Shout us anytime.
Hopefully we can do that one in the flesh.
Or just as holograms, Paul. Or just as holograms. Maybe the three of us can appear for the first time.
We could do it in the metaverse.
In the metaverse, yeah.
Well, you say that, but I've got an Oculus headset where you can now do...
There you go.
Gigs and stand up and go to concerts and sit in the front with it. But it's not where it's going to be, I say, in 10 or 20 years' time. Who knows what the future holds?
Who knows what the future holds? And on that bombshell, dear listeners, just to remind you, as James was saying, you can get this week's Platinum episode on Tier 4 coming up after this, if you're listening and listen ad-free. But you can also email us at hello@newconspiracist.com. We are getting your emails, by the way. We actually do have a mailbag that is building up with some seriously quite contentious things that we will raise very soon. Thank you so much to Paul for coming on the show. Please do check out, if you haven't seen Paul's stand-up, what the fuck have you been doing with your life? You need to check it out right now. I'm a big fan. But from me and from James and from Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Our producer was Selena Ream. Our engineer was Josh Gibbs. Our production coordinator, Lily Hambly. and our executive producer is Alex Lawless. We'll see you next week.